Everyone, and welcome to Sports Community Radio here on RPPFM, the voice of the peninsula. My name is Joe Novella, and along with my co-host, Steve Pallas, we'll be talking all the latest in the world of grassroots sport. G'day, Steve. A big welcome to you, mate.
G'day, Joe. It's great to be here for another week.
I'm so pumped about today's show. We have got Mark Brakey, a bona fide legend of Australian sport. I mean, this guy, when you read his CV, it's amazing.
You're talking about Mark Brakey, obviously.
I am talking about Mark Brakey.
Yeah, his CV is absolutely incredible. 18 years of playing at the highest level, award after award, Australia's youngest Olympic athlete. Basketball at the Olympics, 4 Olympic Games. I can't wait, Joe.
And you know, this bloke, he started playing when he was 14. So for all of you people out there that think it's too late at that age, wrong. 14, he was 6'8" or something at that age. 3 years later, he's going on an Olympic Games. Amazing story. So stay tuned for that. We've also got our world famous top nine, and today's top nine is all about using social media and how you can use it to meet your club's objectives. And the key point there is meeting your club's objectives. So stay tuned for that one as well. But before we get to all of those, Steve, we are going to talk some grants. Is that right?
We are, yes.
I hope so.
Stick to the running sheet, Joe. We'll be right. Now, yes, there's a couple of grants that have opened. One is absolutely massive. It's for New South Wales. It's New South Wales. New South Wales Community Building Partnership Grant. Grant funding of up to $200,000 is available for every New South Wales state electorate, and an additional $100,000 is available for electorates with higher levels of social disadvantage. Now, the Community Building Partnership Grant program aims to provide improved community infrastructure for people of New South Wales and encourage the enhancement of local community-based activities to create more vibrant and inclusive communities. Nothing springs to mind more than sporting clubs. So this is a grant that certainly clubs can apply for through council or directly to improve their facilities and to create partnerships and create activities that create vibrant and inclusive communities. Now, this program, a couple of requirements. The projects need to be ended by the end of March 2016, and applicants must be made between the 9th of June, so it's already open, just opened, and the 18th of July 2014. So if you've got an idea that can improve local community participation and cohesion and opportunities for people with disadvantages or otherwise isolated groups to be included in community activities, then this is a grant for you. So for further information, go to the Sports Community website, www.sportscommunity.com.au, click on the Grants tab and see the New South Wales Community Building Partnership Grant, along with about 50 other grants that are open. One of our favourites grant providers is the Lane Beachley Aim for the Stars Foundation, and their grant, their annual grant program has just opened and is open to all girls, ladies, girls and women across Australia to dream and achieve. So the program offers ambitious and dedicated females an opportunity to receive financial and moral support to help them achieve their goals. The foundation support will give them an opportunity to maintain a determined focus on their goal and achieve their dreams earlier in life and allow them to further their ambitions and aim for the stars. So this is opened for, they've got 6 or 7 different categories, from grants for girls 12 to 15, grants for people with athletes with disabilities, group grants, but all applicants must be females. So this one's just opened and closes on the 14th of November. So you've got a bit of time to put your grant application together. So that's just two of the grants that we've found this week that have opened up. But if you want to know more about the grants that are currently opened around Australia for local sports clubs, go to the website, as I said, www.sportscommunity.com.au, click on the Grants tab, and there should be a grant. There pretty much should be a grant open at the moment that suits the needs of most clubs.
Fantastic. Thanks for that, mate. And stay tuned. A next cab off the rank is the one and only Mark Bradkey. You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Jonah Vella and Steve Pallas. If you've missed a couple of our episodes, why not visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au. And there you'll find all our previous podcasts that you can download. And while you're there, give us a review so you can help spread the news about Sports Community and its services to the grassroots sports clubs. Okay, as we mentioned at the top of the show, we've got a very, very special guest with us today. He is a legend of Australian basketball. His name's Mark Bradkey. Mark Bradkey, welcome to the show.
Good morning, thank you.
Mark, I just want to, I'm sure most of our listeners out there know about your illustrious career, but I just want to reel off a few stats here just to paint the picture of just how well you did go in your career. And NBL's most improved player, 2 times Gaze medal winner, 3 times NBL champion, 7-time NBL leading rebounder, NBL most valuable player, 25th anniversary team, 20th anniversary team, and Australian Basketball Hall of Famer. You've played all over the world. You've played for Melbourne Tigers, Philadelphia. You've played in Greece. Mate, that's an incredible, incredible career.
Yeah, like I said, it all happened a long time ago now. So, you listen to that and you think, oh, okay, yeah, I remember that, remember that, remember that. But, yeah, like I said, it was a fantastic ride while it was happening. I played professionally for 18 years. So I enjoyed it, all aspects, loved competition. And, you do miss it when you go on to different things in life. You miss the competitive nature of it, training and games.
Mate, I just wonder if you could just take us through like the very, very early years where you grew up, how you got involved, introduced to basketball, where you played your first few games, when did you know that you wanted to make a career out of it? Just those early years.
Well, I didn't start playing basketball till I was 14, nearly 15 years of age. So maybe 15. I was just a typical Australian kid playing Aussie rules and cricket. Aussie rules in the wintertime, cricket in the summertime, and just doing things like that. But living in Adelaide, then we moved to Queensland. So I tried 1 year of Aussie rules up there, but just rugby league was well and truly the main sport up there. So sort of didn't really do much sport for a couple of years. Then I saw the Olympics on TV in 1984. And I thought, oh, I'm pretty tall. I should give that sport a go. So I sort of started playing in the schoolyard. And then 3 years later, I made the 88 Olympic team. So I really went from nothing to a lot very, very quickly. So good in some ways, you know, because you're very naive. You don't really know what is expected out of you. And the sport just sort of suited my physical frame and athletic ability. And, it really worked out well.
Wow, that is amazing. 3 years after you pick up a basketball and you're off to the Olympics. Just out of curiosity, when at 14, when you started playing, how tall were you? Do you remember?
I was about 6'9", so nearly my current height. I was about 6'8", 6'9", so I had a big growth spurt. Sort of, 14, 15 years of age, I really shot up. But living in Queensland, didn't really realise, because you don't wear pants up there. And so you just wear shorts every day. I was living down on the beach in a bayside suburb of Brisbane, and just spent a lot of time windsurfing and skateboarding and all those things you sort of do as a youngster. So, and I was just hanging out with everybody else. So even though I knew I was sort of getting taller, I never measured myself or anything like that. So you just did what everyone else was doing. And I think that actually helped out because, you weren't typecast or put into a hole and said, okay, you're big, you do this. So it sort of worked out well because all of a sudden I was like, oh, well, I'm this tall, but I'm sort of coordinated, and it worked. It married up nicely.
Well, just for us mere mortals out there.
And short people in the
world. What was it? Just talk us through a little bit about that first trip to the Olympics. I mean, you're a 17-year-old boy. And you've only been in the game a little bit of time. You got all these. I'm imagining all these people, all these players that have been in the game for a long time. What was that like? You know, going to your first Olympics and not having been in the sport that long.
Yeah, well, you're naive. You don't really know. Like I said, I watched it on the Olympics beforehand, but I didn't watch the opening or closing ceremony. I didn't know you had to go through qualifying or you got to go through this and selection panels and all the rest. So it was, being young, you're naive anyway. There wasn't, there was no internet, no Google, no YouTube to find out what people are doing. So you just go along there and said, oh, okay, lots of other people here. Wonder what they're doing. And so it was great, you know. We get to, you don't really get to see many other sports. Being a basketballer, you play every second day from day one right through to the last day. So you're either training or you're preparing for a game every day. So you don't really get to see many other people. But I had an opportunity to go to a couple of different events. I was lucky enough to go to four Olympics, and I probably went to four or five different events out of all those Olympics. So you just get focused on your task and away you go.
Did you have a crack at some of the world famous players there in the dream team?
Unfortunately, in the 92 Olympics, that was the original dream team, the best dream team, many people say, against with Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Patrick Ewing. They had some fantastic players, but unfortunately we didn't play against them. I think China and ourselves are the only two teams who didn't get to participate against them. It's just the way the draw goes and the crossovers and that. So it would have been great to test yourself. I always like to try and test myself against the best players in the world, but we still play against plenty of very, very good players and plenty of NBA players from European teams. And we played, I had to play Lithuania a couple of times, and we have a guy called Sabonis who played many years in the NBA, and he's 7'4", so he's 150 kilos. I'm 6'11", and about 115, 120 at that stage.
Wow.
So you're really getting pushed around like a little kid. So there were great times to test yourselves and just to see what other people are capable of. It's fantastic.
Oh, Mark, it's Steve Pellis here. How are you going?
Very good.
Hey, thank you so much for joining us on the show. You said as Joe was all 173 centimetres of Joe was running through your playing career, that you remember that and you remember that. So I thought I wanted to take you down a bit down memory lane and not so much get you to tell us the stories about the basketball side, but more so the people that helped you on the journey and when you decided this game's for me, and I can see how you came to that conclusion, where were you, what club did you go to and kind of who helped you along that journey and through the pathways and how did they help you? Because that's one of the things that we kind of try and get across to this to our grassroots sports volunteers is that, you know, they're really instrumental in informing people's lives.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, junior programs, I'm involved with juniors now, so yeah, you're trying to provide a pathway and to show them what can be achieved. But I was playing in Queensland when I saw this, living in Queensland when I saw the Olympics, but I actually moved back to Adelaide a couple of months later, and I was going to go back and try out for AFL. I tried out with the North Adelaide Football Club in the SANFL, under 17s, and I hadn't played for about 3 or 4 years. And one of the people involved with that also were very good friends with a guy called Phil Smythe, not the Olympian Phil Smythe, another Phil Smythe.
Mm-hmm.
Were good, very good friends, and he was coaching one of the domestic basketball teams or the state league basketball teams in South Australia. So when I tried out, he's like, "Oh, if you want to, you can come back and try basketball." So I sort of did both early on, and I really just sort of stuck in the basketball. I really thought, I'll give basketball a go because it was new. So I spent a year training with those guys there at the Noarlunga Tigers in Adelaide. And then I got an opportunity to go to the Institute of Sport. So I spent 2 years in Canberra. And that was probably the big base for me, just to learn the skills, to play against your peers, the same age, they were better than me, but to push yourself all the time, training every day, weights and physios and doctors and all those sort of things. So that was a real eye-opener. And then I went straight into the NBL, so after that. So I was lucky enough, I had a good grounding early there, and then just playing against was a guy called Mark Davis out of Adelaide, who was an American. He was undersized, big man, but he was one of the best rebounders going around. So I trained against him every day and got beaten up by him, and made you stronger and better. And then after a few years there, I moved across to Melbourne and then played alongside Andrew Gates and Leonard Copeland for the next 13 years. So had some good people around you, and it always boils back to the people that you're around, the people that you have to train with. If you don't like your surrounds, you move on, or you give up on that sort of aspect. But we had good people and we enjoyed each other, and we had a lot of time and on and off the court that we spent with each other, and even now we still talk and all that. So that's really what sport's all about. It's about being with your friends and enjoying the success and all the failures together.
Yeah, absolutely. When you joined the basketball club for the first time as a young person, and coming 14-year-old or 15-year-olds relatively late into any sport, were you far behind in a skills sort of thing, or did you just pick that up straight away, or did you have to do a lot of one-on-one work?
You're talking a long time ago now. I know I started when I came down. I hadn't played any other than just schoolyard basketball really until I came to Adelaide, and I think I trained with the under-18 team, but a little bit, played there, but I went straight into the senior state league team and played there. So I went from, like I said, barely learning how to catch and run at the same time to playing with the state league team. You know, there was Adelaide's got a very good state competition.
Yeah. Yeah.
So and out there playing against American imports and everybody. And, yeah, you just get thrown out there and away you go. I wasn't really doing individuals or things like that. It just come to practice, run hard, get beaten up, try and beat them up the next week. And, so it was a rule. I enjoyed the physical contest. That's what I like about basketball the most, is the ability to, like I said, testing yourself. But it's really like with the player, as a big guy, you wrestle at one end, then you sprint down the other end, you have another wrestle, then you sprint back and have another wrestle. And so it's a show of strength or stubbornness or pig-headedness or whatever you want to call it. But that's what I thrived on. I really enjoyed that part of it. And unfortunately, when you retire, that can't happen anymore. But
it's called marriage, mate.
Yeah. And then you got your kids and they want to wrestle you and push you around. But, it's a good question. Like I said, it just happened. And I didn't, like I said, when you're young and naive, you just do it. Like, yeah, oh, this is what you do. Yeah. All right, well, away I go. And you don't. And like I said, this is before internet, so you don't have any idea of who you're playing each week.
Yeah.
He looks about my size, or he's taller, smaller, fatter, speaks a different language, whatever, it didn't matter.
Yep.
And you just go out there and play, and sometimes you get beaten up, and, the opponent would, beat you there. But other times that I'd get the win, but I wouldn't go home and think about it or read about it. I was sort of a person, just go out and play.
Yeah,
and then move on.
So when you did move on from Adelaide to the what we like to call here in Melbourne the sporting capital of the world, and you came to the Melbourne Tigers, and from the outside looking in, I mean, there's obviously Lindsay Gaze, but Melbourne Tigers to me have always seemed to have an amazing group of support staff around the coaching group as well.
There's a lot of people. The manager that was there when I came in 1993, he's still there now. You got people who stay there. We had a pretty stable team. Like I said, Andrew was there, Lennard was there, Warwick Giddy was there, who I'd spent time with in the Institute of Sport.
Nigel Purchase.
Nigel Purchase. Actually, I never played with Nigel. He left when I came in, but he's a very good friend now. But, so we have a consistency. It's the same with the Australian basketball team when I was involved there. We had a core group of about 6 to 8 players that went through, or coaches, that went through from when I started playing right through to I retired. You know, I eventually had the same physios and doctors at all my Olympics in the four that I went to. And the same with the Tigers. You have a core group of people and it becomes family. And, like I said, you see each other every single day. And so you're gonna have your fights, you're going to be happy with them, and you're going to argue with them, and you're going to dispute calls. But at the end of the day, then you're going to come back in, and you jump in the shower, and you talk, and then you go out for the meal, and then you go and do something else, and then you see their kids get born, and now all of a sudden you're going there, and they're turning 20 and 21, and you're like, hang on, where's the time gone? So that's why I've got a lot of fun memories of the Tigers because of the people they're not so much the games that you play, it's sort of the people that you meet and associate with.
Yeah.
Mark, I just wonder, I know it's casting your mind back a little bit, but I just wonder if there was anything that you can remember that you got in terms of coaching, you know, maybe some kind of saying or some kind of coaching tip that really resonated with you and stuck with you and really helped you through your early part of your career?
I wouldn't say there's one thing. As people tell me and I tell the kids now, you know, you can't turn it on and off. I think you've got to go out there and perform and try your best every single time you step out on the court. You can't really take those days off and say, oh, I won't try today, I'll be okay tomorrow, because that just doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because everyone else is trying every day, they're going to practice. So it's about being committed. I like to think when I committed to something, I followed it 100% through. I didn't cop out or take the easy option. Always tried to work hard. Just to enjoy the game. Lindsay Gaze is always about, you know, making sure basketball was the winner, most of all. You know, when we'd have games, he'd be really emphasising that we got to put on a good show. We want to get the win, but we don't want to win ugly in some ways, and that to relax and play our game. And I think that showed with the style of play that we played for a long, long time. We were about pushing the ball up the court, throwing alley-oops, three-pointers.
Yeah.
Yeah, getting the crowd excited, because that would get us excited and it'd make us play better. So, he'd rather win 100 to 99 rather than win 55-54. He's always about, you know, trying to put on a show.
Wow. That's fantastic. There'd be a lot of kids out in sports community land that are going to be listening to this, because you're very well known in basketball circles, of course. If there's one piece that we see it a lot of times, where you get extraordinarily talented kids that don't kick on and make a career out of their sport. If there's one thing that you could give as advice to these kids out there that do have a bit of talent, what is it to get them to the next level? I mean, obviously you were blessed with that stubbornness or that competitive streak that you talk about, but is there something that they can really focus on to get them to the next level? And that doesn't have to be elite, but just to the next level in their development.
I think you can't be complacent. You have to try and make yourself better all the time. I see it with my kids when I'm coaching them in basketball, or I see it in the football, that one year the kids will be really good and the next year maybe they're not quite so good. Other people grow at different rates, different times. Some people are, you know, it'll be big now and be smaller, you know, everyone sort of catches up and overtakes them. So you don't want to sit back and be complacent and say, oh, well, last year I did this, I'll be okay. I think you've got to go out there and commit yourself and believe in it, but also work. You can't expect to get all these things for nothing. All the greatest players out there, they're working hard every single day. You know, talking about basketball, LeBron James lost this week in the playoffs, and if you go onto YouTube and watch the way he works out in the off-season, and he's the greatest player in the world. You know, he's got the most talent, and if anything, he could say, you know what, I've done all the hard work. No one's bigger, stronger, faster than me, but he'll be out there working harder just about than anybody else, and he's the best. So you got to say, well, if I want to catch him, I've got to do what he does and some. And that doesn't matter if it's under-12 basketball, under 16 footy, or whatever you're doing. You've got to go out there and don't expect things to be handed to you. Just because your team's top and another team's bottom, don't go out there and think that you're going to get a win and the bottom team's going to lay down. No, they're going to try and, when you're at the top, you're the hunted. Everyone's trying to get you. So if you sit back, well, those hunters will come eventually, they'll catch you. So everyone's just got to not take it for granted and enjoy it while you're there too.
I wish my coaches had told me that, Steve.
I was going to ask you about your coaching career with the kids, but you did raise LeBron James, and we're talking to you today, the day after Australian Patty Mills has got a championship ring in the NBA. That that must be exciting. I mean, it's exciting for Joe and I. We're excited talking about it in the office this morning. I mean, for someone that's been there, done that, and been involved in the system, that must be even more exciting, because you know what it took to get there.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. You know, the Spurs played such great team basketball. You know, you're talking about you know, LeBron James and being the greatest athlete in the world.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? The San Antonio Spurs are probably the least athletic basketball team in the NBA. I think I saw last year's stats. They had, well, not this last season, the season before, I think they had one alley-oop dunk. So that means the person's passed the ball, the other athletes caught it and dunked it in one motion.
Yeah.
I think they had one for the year. So you've got Tim Duncan, who's 38. You've got all these other, and they're all foreigners. They're all got, they're from Argentina, Brazil, Spain, I think it's Italian, Australians. So they've got this mess together. So they're not the most athletic, but they are the best team you'll ever watch. So if you get a chance to get on YouTube, you can get, I think there's a special Spurs one I watched a couple of weeks ago, and the way they pass the ball and move it around and support each other and move, a lot of times you see, a lot of times you'll pass to the best player ever and also stand there and just watch him, whereas the Spurs, everyone moves. And it is the best thing to watch. It was really, really inspirational. So to watch the finals, to see Patty Mills light it up in the third quarter, to see the joy that all these players have and what they achieve, because you can take a lot of things away from you when you retire and all that, but those memories that they'll have, it won't be the shot that they make or the steal that they get. It'll be in the locker room after the game.
Yeah.
You know, enjoying that time and saying, you know what, all that hard work's worth it.
Yeah.
You know, all the things we did, it's all worth it. And that's really what you'll do when you retire. That's what you'll miss. You don't miss the training, but you miss those good times with your mates.
Especially since Paddy only got 14 minutes, I think, last year, and he's come back and he's just absolutely lit up the court, as you said, and. And we'll claim Aaron as well, won't we?
Oh, well, no. I actually played with his brother in Brisbane. I think he moved to Australia when he was about 2 or 3. So he's been living in Cairns. He's virtually
yeah, he's an Aussie.
So, yeah, no, he's definitely an Aussie. You know, he's played for, he's a Boomer. He wears my old number 12. So, no, he's definitely Australian. So, yeah, like I said, he's where Paddy was a few years ago, on the bench, supporting, learning, and some people can't handle that and they'll duck out. But Paddy Mills showed if you stay around, persevere, work hard, well, then and you get your opportunity, you make the most of it. So that's what he did.
Yeah, that's outstanding. It's a great lesson for everyone, really. Do you think it's going to have a flow on effect in Australian basketball, like in particularly at the grassroots level?
I think you can't not be inspired by what has happened.
Mm.
And
I agree.
Like I said, when Andrew Gaze won his with the Spurs in 1999, and when Luke Longley won his with 96 or 97, whatever it was, that was really, you know, technology has changed so much now, and we, you know, we can all see it on our phones or our iPads, and all the kids, they can go and witness that. So it will reach a long way. You know, there's already thousands of kids that play basketball, which is really good to see. I know I coach in the VJBL, so you see so many kids all out competing, boys and girls, all different levels. And all those kids know about it, so they'll be telling all their friends at school. And, it will be a bonus.
Mark, just on that topic, I haven't checked the latest figures from the Australian Bureau of Statistics, but I've been told that basketball is now the number one participation sport amongst the kids. How do we translate that into the senior side of the sport to give it a bigger profile? Is it just down to the media rights, or is there a couple of other things that we can do?
Well, basketball, juniors are very big. I think domestic social basketball is even bigger. So you say, how do you get those kids to go? Well, they're all playing. Domestic basketball is massive in the state as well, in the country. So definitely, I think the biggest participation sport in Australia. How do you get at the top? Well, that's a question that a lot of people are trying to answer, and they can't quite work it out. I'd like to see it move back to winter. I think right now, if you sit on Twitter yesterday and everyone's saying, what a great finals, now what are they doing until October? You know, they're all talking, and what are we going to talk about? So why not have the NBL in the season away from the NBA and Europe and college basketball? So right now, I can choose between watching LeBron James play Patty Mills in the NBA Finals, or we watch Australian, even though Australian finished a bit earlier. But if we have the Australian season opposite to that, we'll get better quality Australians and imports here in the wintertime. And I know they're worried about the AFL, but we're different sports, a different beast. I think that that'll be a great time for the basketball. If you had to do one thing, that's the first thing I would do. I'd change the season.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I think you're right. There's quite a lot of sports that do get spooked by the AFL, but there's a lot of sports that quite successfully coexist, including Melbourne Storm in Melbourne, who are a great example of it.
Like I said, you know what? If the NBL started, you know, in 3 weeks' time, there would have been a big spin-off from the NBA Finals. You know what? Aaron Baines might have come back and played.
Yeah.
You know, he might come back and say, you know what, I'm not playing much there. I'll come back here. I'll play for 4 months. I'll get better. Then I'll go back to the Spurs. Spurs are happy because he's getting to play. Australians happy because we've got an NBA champion playing in our league.
Oh,
you can't say that's not bad. So we're talking much smaller crowds in the AFL. We're talking about a smaller sport. But I think if you did that, then you'll get some... not everybody likes AFL. No. So, we like it, but we like variety as well. So I think it would actually help a whole lot. But like I said, I'm not in control of it, so I don't get a say.
But you have an opinion, and I guess there's one question that I would love to get your opinion on, and I'm not sure whether it's the Melbourne Tigers changing, probably one of the most recognised sporting brands in the country, changing to Melbourne United is incredibly courageous leadership decision or incredibly naive, and I guess the only time will tell that. But what's your thoughts on that change?
I can see it from both sides. I run my own small business, and I understand the value of branding and marketing and trying to get new involvement and all these sort of things. It's sad that you lose history because without history, you don't have a lot to draw upon. It's very hard to write an article about a team where, you know, if you haven't won for a while, you can always go back and say three-time NBL champion or this or that. You know, I got introduced and you said all those things.
Yeah.
Well, when you've got a new club now, you can't say that you've won all these championships. You can't say that Andrew Gaze used to play for this team here. You can't say, you know, oh, it'll be okay because last year we won, you know, we won the final or whatever. They're starting from scratch, so that you can't, just to advertise and market it now, you don't have all that history. You can't say, oh, we're going to go and celebrate such and such person because he did something for the club and we're going to, you know, have a dinner. Well, that doesn't happen now. It'll 10 years' time, 15 years' time, yeah, you can do that. But so for right now, you can't do that at all. So it's that's the biggest disappointment of it all. That's what I see it as, you know. For myself, I don't unfortunately get to go to basketball that often because Friday nights we got junior basketball, so that counts us out. And then Sundays, that's when we train all the Tigers train, all the juniors. So yeah. I've only got Saturday nights, and then like I said, most of the games are on Friday and Sunday. So even if I wanted to go, sometimes I can't get there.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting. To be interesting to watch this space and see how, particularly the Melbourne sporting community, either embrace it or move away from it. But you mentioned your own business, which is Moorabbin Indoor Sports. How did you get into that side of it?
Look, when you retire, you're always looking, trying to work out what's the next step. And my wife being a tennis player, and this is a tennis center. And, just having a little look. So we bought that about 5 years ago. And it was a tennis then they had a third party, Joe, that was looking after the futsal, but then they decided to leave after about 6 weeks, so I didn't know what to do about soccer.
Terrible decision that was.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, yeah, we've built it up and we've got plenty of soccer and netball and futsal going on here and lots of tennis and trying to do lots of different things. We're about to install an indoor trampoline centre in about 2 weeks. We start construction. Wow. So we're going to try and have something where we're trying to encourage participation with the kids, try different sports, all under one roof there. So that's our goal.
Mark, just for the folks out there, the indoor centre there in Cochrane's Road that you run, the soccer portion of it, that is a state-of-the-art indoor soccer arena. It's absolutely, and people who know me and know that I'm a soccer tragic, it is, for those of you who are looking to play indoor soccer, then get to Moorabbin Indoor, because that place there, that playing surface, that whole setup is absolutely... And I know you've got quite a few teams, but I'm sure you'd welcome a few more, so...
Oh, most definitely. And like, we try to get the adults as well. We've got mixed teams now. We got all the juniors over the summertime. So we enjoy, like I said, we try to encourage participation. We do as much as we can to help everybody out. If we can't find it, they haven't got a team, we try and fit them into spots. And, we really try to, like I said, it's a good setup. We're actually refitting out, like I said, in a couple of weeks we're doing the trance, but redoing the whole centre and repainting and, you know, new bits and pieces here and there. So just trying to, you know, grow and expand and, like I said, give more people opportunities.
So how can people find out about the Moorabbin Indoor Centre?
You can just go to our website, which is... www.mitennis, so mitennis.com, or 9555 3900, and we have we'll have all our stuff on the website, but we do heaps of kids parties and you name it, we got things happening.
Brilliant. We'll put all your contact details on the show notes so the listeners can contact you directly, because it's interesting the 6 or 7 degrees of separation, because at one stage in Joe's previous life, he actually worked at the indoor centre, so it's ironic that you...
Yeah. No, I saw Joe the other day and he was stoned, and it is a very small world.
Can I just... Now, you did raise something that I did want to bring up, and I was going to bring it up in the show introduction, but you met... I'm not sure if it was fortunate or unfortunate enough to meet Joe at a... at a Crown Casino function to launch the World Cup. Now, I'm not sure whether you saw him play any of the football on that night, but, geez, he talks himself up in the office. Did you happen to see him? Is he any good?
Well, put it this way, I played with someone who won an opportunity to play with me, and I played against Russell Gilbert, the comedian. Yes. He said he wasn't very good. He was the only one who hit the ball in this table soccer. He hit 3 goals within about 30 seconds, but Joe was off even faster than I was. So I don't know what he's been talking about. But, it's a skillful game, and I thought I had him covered, but Russell Gilbert, man, he was very, very good. I couldn't believe he lost. Actually, he lost in the semi-finals to Archie Thompson, and who actually went on, and he lost to Billy Brownless. I think Billy Brownless might have had a little bit of a ring in help. I think the girl he was playing with was, if not a world champion, she's very close to it.
Yeah, well, we said to Joe, and we've completely digressed off our questions here, but we asked Joe, how did you go? He goes, my partner was Joe Bailey. My partner was Joe Bailey. That's all we could get out of him. But...
So he was too busy looking at Joe, wasn't he?
No, I had my wife Fiona there who you knew in a past life as well. And she would have made sure I was focused on the game, Mark. And
You would be asking her about the weather, wouldn't you?
and as Joe tries to bring us back to the conversation, I'm really, really keen to just as we finish off, I guess, to talk about your coaching, the current coaching that you're doing with the kids, and what level are you coaching, and how are you enjoying that, and how does it compare to playing? Probably harder,
I think. It's harder than playing, I reckon. Because I'm coaching under 16 Melbourne Tigers boys, 16 twos.
Yep.
So my son's involved with that. So we Yeah, we have a trying time, father-son relationship. You know, as most people know, it's always hard trying to teach your kids what to do.
Yeah.
They think they may know better. But, yeah, so I coach them a few times a week, and then I'm looking, helping out with the Halebury basketball team as well. So I'm there. So I'm doing just all the junior stuff, trying to help them show them what they can achieve, what their options are. And, yeah, there's some good kids willing to listen and learn, and that's the most enjoyable part.
Mark, just on behalf of Steve and I and all the folks at Sports Community and everyone that listens into the show, we just want to extend a big thank you to you for coming on to the show. Someone of your ilk to make time to talk to the grassroots sports community is very valued by us. So thanks, mate. We really appreciate you spending some time with us.
No problem. Thank you.
More and more people with a taste for quality are shopping at Eliza Meats. Kevin and his lean team pride themselves on the finest cuts. From juicy steaks and roasts to high-grade mince and sausages, and Eliza Meats are the gourmet specialists. Inquire about Eliza Meats Spit Hire. Phone 9787 4473 for a mouth-watering meal fit for a king. It's all at Eliza Meats. See our sponsor Kevin at Eliza Meats, 112B Mount Eliza Way, a station sponsor.
It's the weekend, the footy's on, the big men are flying, and you need something to satisfy that hunger. Baked In is the real deal. Baked In have a range of mouth-watering, piping hot pies, scrumptious gluten-free cakes and breads. Three locations, Sorrento, Portsea and Blairgowrie. Never far away from the action, Baked In is an RPPFM sponsor.
The waiting is over. Watch the big men fly. Don't miss a minute of the action. Join Toe Punt Kelly and the boys as they bring you all the excitement of the local football season. RPPFM, your home of local football.
This is Sally from Sweet Pea Cuisine. At Sweet Pea Cuisine, we specialise in sharing knowledge, passion and enjoyment around food. We run cooking classes for kids, teens and adults, present food events and cooking demonstrations, create recipes to highlight your product and style food for the camera. Join me every Tuesday morning on the breakfast program when I chat about all things food on the peninsula. To find out more, visit me at www.sweetpeacuisine.com.au and like my Facebook page, Sweet Pea Cuisine. Stay sweet with Sweet Pea Cuisine, a station sponsor.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Steve Pellis and Joe Novella, another Sports Community digital production, courtesy of www.sportscommunity.com.au. Okay, today's top nine is the top nine ways to use social media to meet your club's objectives, Steve.
Yes, Joe, and I thought just before we jump into the top nine, we might just touch on, speaking of social media, how's the online social media training going?
It's good, really, really good. I'm really excited about it and really excited to produce some online training for everyone out there in volunteer land. This online training will enable people to sit down at their computer, and there's going to be topics that are very, very important for your club, like using Facebook, for example, that you'll be able to sit down at your computer and learn in your own time. So it's going to be a great service for the volunteers of grassroots sports clubs, and I'm excited to be part of its production.
You are excited. And the thing I love about the training, Joe, is it's focusing on achieving club goals. So that's what this top nine is all about. Top nine ways to use social media to achieve club goals, not just top nine ways to use social media.
That's
so
right.
Number one, Joe, sorry to cut you off there, mate. Number one, engage potential new members and link your social media to the club's website.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the common mistakes that clubs make with social media is that they use social media in isolation. So when we talk social media, we're talking about Facebook, we're talking about Twitter, we're talking about Instagram, we're talking about these tools that allow you to network socially on the computer. And rather than using them in isolation, what we're asking you to do is to link them back to your website. And there's a number of ways that you can do that. You can provide a link simply on your social media to go back to your website, or you can include them as a widget on your social, on your website. And that's very easy to do. Most webmasters or people that are involved in setting up your website at your club will know how to do that. And that brings visitors back to your website, which should be the central place for all your communications at your club.
That's a fantastic point, Joe. We hear quite a lot in the training sessions now that clubs are moving away from websites and using Facebook and Twitter as the central repository for information, which really is fundamentally incorrect from a communication strategy point of view. But we might tackle that in another top nine, Joe. Number two, grow strong relationships. You can use social media to grow strong relationships with sponsors and advertise them through your social media sites.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the biggest challenges for clubs is to when you sit down every year and you have that discussion with your sponsor, well, you need to prove to them that you're adding value. So to prove to them that you're helping them in some way to grow their business. Now, not all sponsors want that. No, some sponsors are happy just to contribute to the club, but more and more sponsors want to be able to see a return on their investment. And by advertising them in your social media, you can demonstrate to them that you're going the whole nine yards for them. You're committed to putting their business in front of your club members, and you're proactive about it. And that's a good message for your sponsors.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's also you can measure the sort of engagement you're getting and feed that back to the sponsors. So number three, use social media to be more appealing for potential sponsors, Joe, which is a tremendous opportunity for clubs.
Yeah, absolutely, and people talk about likes on Facebook, and sure they are important. Likes are important, and it's one way to possibly attract new sponsors to your club by showing them the amount of likes that you've got on social media or followers that you've got on Twitter. But more powerful than that is engagement. So if you can show potential sponsors that even if you've got 50 people liking your Facebook page or only 50 followers, if those 50 are contributing photos, if they're engaging in competitions, if they're engaging in discussion, that's going to be a very powerful way to attract a sponsor, a potential sponsor, because the sponsor can see that you've got an active club community, and an active club community is much more attractive to them than a passive club community. So social media that is active at your club is a great way to attract potential sponsors.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe, because the more active, then probably the larger the audience that's seeing the messages. So absolutely right for sponsors. But on the other side of the coin, getting people involved in the social media is a great way of getting people involved in their club. So number four is include as many people in your events as possible by updating in real time the happenings of your events.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is well within the realms of possibility nowadays with the technology that we have. So you know, whether you can use Facebook to do it, probably a better tool is Twitter. Instagram is probably the best tool of the lot, and what you can do is you can capture moments in real time. So whether it be a mark of the day or something that's happening at a fundraiser, you know, someone's won the best dressed or something along those lines, you can update your social media either by a picture or by a tweet or via a post and give your club audience real-time information about what's happening around at your club.
Yeah, and one of the functions that Facebook has that I really like is the check-in function, Joe. So when people are at your club, then ask them to pull out their Facebook and check in. And that means that really telling all their followers where they are at that particular point of time, which is really saying, hey, I'm at this club, and hopefully they put a photo or a comment on to say that they're having a really good time, which just attracts more and more people to the club. Number five. Now, I absolutely love this concept and passionately believe that we should recognise volunteers even more than we recognise the endeavours of our players. So number five is include stories on social media about volunteers, stories and pictures and videos.
And I'm with you on this. This is so, so important. And it's a way of storytelling, which is a really powerful way to engage people in your social in your social media community or your community around your club, because when you talk about your volunteers, you're usually talking about your storytelling. You're talking about their contribution to the club, you know, their history at the club. And let's face it, we need players at our sports clubs, but it's the volunteers that make the places tick over. And some of them have been around the club for 20, 30 years. So by highlighting their contributions to the club, not only are you engaging your community, because those volunteers will have families, they'll have friends, what you're doing is you're enhancing the culture of your club by recognising the people who make it tick. So it's very, very important.
And if the person that posts the photo or the story about the volunteer is not involved in the committee, but just sees someone doing a great job at the club, and they just take the time to post it, and that's really powerful, because it's almost peers recognizing and thanking the volunteer, someone else, for helping them be able to participate in their club, and you're 100% right in that. It's a fantastic way of recognising and rewarding volunteers, and we've got to get away from this concept that the only time we recognise and reward volunteers is by giving them a trophy on presentation night, or the ladies that help in certain ways, we give them a bunch of flowers. You know, we've got to get away from that concept and start to recognise and reward volunteers each week, every time we're talking to our members, so we get that behaviour and that culture of volunteering in the club.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't. And the other thing we need to get away from is the fact that it's all too hard. What we're talking about is a 5-minute exercise most times. You know, you can make it a lot more elaborate, but if you take a picture and you write a small caption, thanks to John Smith for helping out with the Nets over the last 5 years, and you're done. And the other thing it does is it reduces the volunteer burnout, because a lot of people, they give their life and soul to the club, and after 2 or 3 years they just feel like they've just been trodden all over and they don't want to do it anymore. Whereas, you know, we recognise our volunteers, even in these small ways, that can help alleviate that problem.
I remember we were up, not long ago, Joe, we were up training in the Northern Territory, and we're doing a session, and one of the most powerful things, we're talking about volunteers, one of the most powerful things that I've heard in a training session was one of the attendees said that every post that they do on social media was with hashtag I love this club, and that was more about highlighting the contributions of the people that made the club tick, more so than the I guess the endeavours of the athletes, and that's always stuck with me, that hashtag I love my club. So that's really, really, really powerful. So use social media to recognise and reward volunteers. They will absolutely love it. Number six, grow the impact of your fundraising events by advertising them on social media. And advertising on social media is something that's a very foreign thought to us, because we think because we're not used to paying for social media, but it can be very, very effective, Joe.
Absolutely. This is a great way to improve the numbers at fundraising events. So, you know, you have your classic trivia nights and these kind of things at your club. You can do two things. You can just put a banner or a photo or some kind of profile on your Facebook page, or send out a tweet, or put something on your website that promotes the event. And that's a great start, because you're using social media to do that. The other thing, you can pay a little bit extra, and this is a feature of Facebook. And often it's just a case of $20, something along those lines, to boost the post. And that puts the post out to a lot more people. And often the return on investment for that is fantastic, because you get your event get exposed to a hell of a lot more people than you could if you tried to do it word of mouth or any other method. And you might find that you get a whole lot more take up in your tickets.
Yeah, and one of the things about the social media advertising is that you can really target the person and the characteristics of the person. So you can say, I only want this post to go to people that live within 10 kilometres of this town.
Or
that,
your club.
Yeah, your club, that have an interest in, if you're
your sport.
couldn't have said it better myself, Joe. Fantastic. Absolutely. And that's a way, and particularly it doesn't have to be for fundraising events. Could be when you're looking for, you know, come sign on days and registration days and you're looking for new participants. There's a fantastic way of doing that.
And if you do, if you're listening to this out there and you think, oh gosh, I don't know that, and this is all a bit hard and there's a lot of technology, well, you just come to our website, sportscommunity.com.au, or give us a call and we can help you. There's a number of services that we provide that will help you in that area. Don't be afraid to give us a call. We do social media day in, day out, so we know what we're talking about.
We do, and so do all of many of the other members in your club. So also don't get too worried about if you don't know how to use these technologies, because particularly the younger members of your club, they've grown up on them and more than happy to teach. I know my daughter is more than happy to tell me how to do some of the things on social media. So number seven is one of the great things about Facebook is that it allows us to have events on, create events online and invite people online, Joe, to our events.
Really, really powerful tool for your club. One of the best assets that Facebook has is this event type post. And basically what you can do is you can create an event on Facebook and you can invite people at your club to come along, and this actual event sends out invites to Facebook profiles. So people, it's kind of an implied pressure for people to at least look at the event, and that's a good result, because more often than not, if you're sending out invites to events on email, it's very easy for that to get lost in the trash or get deleted. But this is a great way of setting up an event and sending it to everyone that you know on your Facebook and them having to at least respond to it.
Yeah, and nothing gets momentum at an event by more than by seeing who else is going. And that Absolutely, generates, yeah. Oh, I'd like to see John. I haven't seen John for 10 years. I'd love to see John, for instance. And that has great momentum. Number eight, Joe, we better wrap it up a bit quickly here, but continue relationships with past players by including historical stories and profiles.
Another very powerful storytelling element of social media, and that is the ability to profile the history of players in the club. And this is a great way to engage your community, and that is every club's got club legends. Tell their story. There'll be people in the club community that will be really interested in that. And not only that, you might even bring back some of the past players and re-engage them into your club. And that's a whole new audience then for fundraising and for those
volunteers.
So it's a really, really great thing to do, and not hard either.
No, not hard. And number nine, a little bit of fun. Engage your audience with fun and engaging posts such as competitions, you know, which player from this era is better than that era, or polls or pictures or trivia or stories or memes. So we have a lot of options we can play around with. It's not just a post now.
Absolutely. And you know, you'd be surprised at how many people will attempt to answer a question when you test their knowledge. People love trivia. So put out a question about when was the last time the club won two flags in a row or something along those lines, and people will come out of the woodwork to answer it. And not only that, but competitions, and you don't need to have a car as a prize. You can have simple prizes that might be less than $10. It's just the fact that you do it regularly and people get used to the idea that you're going to have competitions at the club, and that engages them and gets them checking their social media for any posts that are coming out from the club.
The Beaconsfield Netball Club, I know, does a weekly trivia competition and a weekly trivia question, Joe, and I noticed that last week's question got over 80 comments on it as people were trying to work out the answer. So it's a fantastic way of engaging. So our top nine ways to use social media to achieve club goals: engage, link your social media to your website, number one, grow your relationships with your sponsors, number two, use social media to attract new sponsors, number three, number four is include as many people as you can at your events, asking them to check in. Number five, include stories about volunteers. Number six, utilize social media to maximize your fundraising. certainly through advertising. Number 7, post your events on social media and invite people. Number 8, continue relationships with past players. And number 9, use fun and engaging tactics like competitions, polls, pitches, and trivia.
Thanks for joining us today on RPPFM, the voice of the peninsula. We hope you've enjoyed the show. If you just tuned in and you like what you've heard and you want to catch up on previous shows that or replay this one, then visit our podcast page at www.sportscommunity.com.au, where you can find all of our previous shows for download as well as show notes. And while you're there, subscribe to our newsletter for the latest and greatest in grassroots sports news. You can also find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio, but don't just listen to the show. Why not subscribe to our feed so you can get automatically updated when a new podcast episode is available? And give us a review so we can improve what we do. So on behalf of me, Jonah Vella.
And me, Steve Pallas, thank you for making us part of your sports community.